ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we're reading a very important sloka that Prabhupada would often quote in reference to his accepting sannyas on this day. We never quite get to this verse because it's in the 88th chapter of the 10th canto, text 8. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Yasyaha Manugrinami Harisyeta danam shanae Tato danam tyajantyasya Svajana dukadukitam. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Personality of Godhead said, Yasya, whom? Aham, I. Anugrinami, favor. Harishye, I will take away. Tat, his. Danam, wealth. Shanai, gradually. Tata, then. Adanam, poor. Tyajanti, abandon. Asya, his, svajanaha, relatives and friends, dukadukitam, who suffers one distress after another. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead said, if I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Purport. Devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as consequences of material work, but as incidental effects of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, his definitive treatise on the process of devotional service, explains how a Vaishnava is relieved of all karmic reactions, including those that have not yet begun to manifest, aprarabdha, those that are just about to manifest, kuta, those that are barely manifesting, bij, and those that have manifested fully, prarabdha. As a lotus gradually loses its many leaves, so a person who takes shelter of devotional service has all his karmic reactions destroyed. That devotional service to Lord Krishna eradicates all karmic reactions is confirmed in this passage of the Gopal Tapani Shruti, Purva 15. Devotional service is the process of worshipping the Supreme Lord. It consists of fixing the mind upon him by becoming disinterested in all material designations, both in this life and the next. It results in the dissolution of all karma. While it is certainly true that those who practice devotional service remain in material bodies and apparently material situations for some time, this is simply an expression of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord, who bestows the fruits of devotion only when it has become pure. In every stage of devotion, however, the Lord watches over his devotee and sees to the gradual elimination of his karma. Thus, despite the fact that the happiness and distress devotees experience resemble ordinary karmic reactions, they are in fact given by the Lord himself. As the Bhagavatam 10.87.40 states, a mature devotee recognizes the superficially good and bad conditions he encounters as signs of the direct guidance of his ever-well-wishing Lord. But if the Lord is so compassionate to his devotees, Why does he expose them to special suffering? This is answered by an analogy. A very affectionate father takes his responsibility of restricting his children's play and making them go to school. He knows that this is a genuine expression of his love for them, even if the children fail to understand. Similarly, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is mercifully strict with all his dependents, not only with immature devotees struggling to become qualified. Even perfect saints like Prahlad, Dhruva, and Yudhisthira were subjected to great tribulations, all for their glorification. After the battle of Kurukshetra, Sri Bhishma Dev described to King Yudhisthira his wonder at this. Bhagavatam 1:9-15-16. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of King Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with the club, the great bowman Arjun with his mighty weapon Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Pandavas. O King, no one can know the plan of the Lord, Sri Krishna. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, they are bewildered. Although a Vaishnava's happiness and distress are felt as pleasure and pain, just like ordinary karmic reactions, they are different in a significant sense. Material happiness and distress arising from karma leave a subtle residue, the seed of future entanglement. Such enjoyment and suffering tend toward degradation and increase the danger of falling into hellish oblivion. Happiness and distress generated from the Supreme Lord's desires, however, leave no trace after their immediate purpose has been served. Moreover, the Vaishnava who enjoys such reciprocation with the Lord is in no danger of falling down into nescience. As Yamaraj, the Lord of Death and the judge of all departed souls, declared, "My dear servants, please bring to me only those sinful persons who do not use their tongues to chant the holy name and qualities of Krishna, whose hearts do not remember the lotus feet of Krishna even once, and whose heads do not bow down even once before Lord Krishna. Send me those who do not perform their duties toward Vishnu, which are the only duties in human life. Please bring me all such fools and rascals." Bhagavatam 6:329. The beloved devotees of the Lord do not regard as very troublesome the sufferings he imposes on them. Indeed, they find that in the end it gives rise to unlimited pleasure, just as a stinging ointment applied by a physician cures his patient's infected eye. In addition, suffering helps protect the confidentiality of devotional service by discouraging intrusions by the faithless, and it also increases the eagerness with which the devotees call upon the Lord to appear. If the devotees of Lord Vishnu were complacently happy all the time, he would never have a reason to appear in this world as Krishna, Ramachandra, Nrisimha, and so on. As Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita 4:8, "To deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium." And without the Lord showing himself on earth in his original form of Krishna and in the forms of various incarnations, his faithful servants in this world would have no opportunity to enjoy his Rasa Lila and other pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti here counters a possible objection. What fault would there be in God's incarnating for some other reason than to deliver saintly persons from suffering? The learned Acharya responds, "Yes, my dear brother, this makes good sense, but you are not expert in understanding spiritual moods. Please listen. It is at night that the sunrise becomes attractive. During the hot summer, that cold water gives comfort. And during the cold winter months, that warm water is pleasing. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of day. And when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good." In other words, to strengthen his devotee's mood of dependence on him and longing for him, The Lord arranges for his devotees to go through some suffering, and when he appears in order to deliver them, their gratitude and transcendental pleasure are boundless. So with this theme of this very important sloka, this sloka is coming in the chapter when Vrikasura tries to attack Lord Shiva and Krishna protects him as a young Brahmin boy. So this day has many significant occasions. First of all, it's the day after Ananta Chaturdasi, which we just celebrated yesterday. It also happens to be the disappearance day of Haridas Thakur. But Prabhupada also explains to the devotees that Ananta Chaturdasi is very significant in itself. It's supposed to be the appearance day of Ananta Padmanabha, Ananta Purushottam, Ananta Dev himself. And he told us that we're supposed to fast until 5 o'clock on Ananta Chaturdasi. And today we're supposed to feast. Today is Bhadrapad Purnima. That's the last day of the month of Purnima, the second month of Chaturmas. So on this particular day, at the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami, he praises the Srimad Bhagavatam very highly as the Amala Puranam, just as the Ganges is the greatest of all rivers, as Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas, as Vishnu is the greatest of all avatars. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of all the Puranas. And he also says there, this is Canto 12, Chapter 13, verses 8 through 13, that if one places the Srimad Bhagavatam on a golden throne, if we don't have a golden throne, we can put a golden throne, put the Bhagavatam on a golden throne in our mind, and then offers that Bhagavatam as a gift to someone, well, all of his karmic reactions become nil and void. He becomes liberated from the material world. So devotees, they're not interested in liberation, they're already liberated, but they are interested in liberating those souls who have not yet surrendered to the Supreme Lord. And that process of liberation is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, especially on this day, we attempt to distribute Srimad Bhagavatam. Aside from it being Bhadra Purnima, it's also Vishwarup Mahotsava. Now, Sri Vishwarup was the elder brother of Vishvambar, who was Sri Sri Gaurhari Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later in his life. As the elder brother, he was also the incarnation of Balaram and the manifestation of Shankarshan. Shankarshan is the Angsi of the Angs. It means he's the portion, the first expansion of Sri Krishna. And from Shankarshan come three principal avatars: Garbhadakshai Vishnu, first Karanadakshai Vishnu, and then after making the creation, he enters into it as Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and then he enters into every atom and lives on Svetadeep in every universe as Kiradakshai Vishnu. So these three Vishnu forms expand from this Mahashankarshan, who is one of the members of the Chaturvyuha coming from Sri Vishnu. So when Krishna appears, he appears with all of his avatars and all of his associates. And this Mahashankarshan appeared at his elder brother, Vishwarup. Because he was older to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vishwambar, as a little boy, for instance, his mother used to tell him, go find your brother and bring him for lunch. So Gaurhari was so attractive as a young child. When he would go to the home of Advaitacharya to call Vishwarup, Advaitacharya would become stunned by his beauty. He was so attractive that he realized, this must be the Supreme Lord. I've never been attracted to a little child like this. Now, why would Vishwarup go to the home of Advaitacharya? Vishwarup was renounced from his childhood. He saw all around him his teachers, the members of the Brahmin community, members of the whole community. They were engaged in activities that appeared to be worship of Vishnu, but they were just doing those activities for some personal gain. And with whatever money they got, they would use for their families, for their children, to increase their material enjoyment. Everywhere he looked, he could not find pure Krishna bhakti. Even those Brahmins who were reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, they did not teach the essence of the Shastras, which is Krishna bhakti. So he was very depressed in his childhood, looking for someone who would teach him Krishna bhakti. And the only person he found who was purely teaching Krishna bhakti was Sri Advaitacharya. So even as a young boy, he would go every day to the home of Advaitacharya and hear his discourses on Krishna bhakti. And that's why Mother Sachi would send Vishrambar to call his elder brother to come for lunch. Now when Vishwaroop attained the age of about 16, his parents began arranging for his marriage. And Vishwaroop has no interest whatsoever in entering into material life. So he left his home. He went to Kashi, and there he accepted the sannyas order from Krishna Bharati Swami, another sannyasi there. And he was given the name Shankaranya Swami, which is a sannyasi name within the order of the Bharatis. After that, he began to travel. This was in 1491. He began to travel all over India. Now, Vishrambar, he was still a young boy. And when Vishwaroop left home, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi were heartbroken. They couldn't get over their grief. So Vishrambar, he tried to console them by saying, it's very good that Vishwaroop has taken sannyas, because now he has liberated both his mother's family and his father's family. So in that way, he stayed home with his parents. Then Jagannath Mishra, he left this world. And in order to give more consolation to his mother, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed to take entered the Grihastha ashram. He married once, and then he married a second time also. Now, Shankaranya Swami is described in the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita to be the 48th branch of the Chaitanya tree. And he has three main sub-branches. That is Mukunda, Kashinath, and Rudra. So, Shankaranya Swami, of course, that's Vishwaroop. But during his pastimes in Navadvip, Mukunda was elder, and he had a son named Purushottam. So Mukunda, who's also called Mukunda Sanjay sometimes, his son became the student of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was a pandit. And Nimai Pandit, he began his Patashala in the home of Mukunda. So he was one of the disciples, one of the branches of Shankaranya Swami. The next was Kashiram. Kashinath, I forget which name was given. Now, he was a Brahmin who arranged for the marriage of Nimai Pandit by approaching one of the court pundits who agreed to give his daughter in marriage to Nimai Pandit. In Krishna Leela, in the Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, which describes who's who in Gaura Leela and Krishna Leela. So in Krishna Leela, Kashiram was the Brahmin named Kulaka. And it was he who was sent by the father of Satyabhama to arrange for the marriage between Satyabhama and Krishna. So he had the same service in Krishna Leela as he had in Gaura Leela. And the third, Rudra, he was a great devotee who was Varutapa, one of Krishna's friends in Krishna Lila. And he established a beautiful temple in Bengal. So Shankaranya Swami, after traveling extensively all over India to preach Krishna consciousness, he came to the district of Solapur in Maharashtra. And in Solapur district is the holy place where Vitalanath lives, and that's Pandharpur. So there, Shankaranya Swami attained spiritual perfection. Some say that he entered into the body of Vitalanath, and some say he entered into Samadhi on the banks of the Bhima River there. And that was in 1509-1510. Some people say 1509, some people say 1510. So in 1511, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that he would give up his home and he would enter sannyas. Now, it's the opinion of some people that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also accepted the sannyas order on the same day as Vishwaroop, on this Vishwaroop Mahotsava. But according to Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas on the Makar Sankranti in the month of Magh. And this is Purnima in the month of Bhadra. So this Purnima in the month of Bhadra is not the date, according to the Shastras, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas. It's the date when Vishwaroop accepted sannyas in Kashi. Aside from it being the day when Vishwaroop accepted sannyas, later in Katva, many years later, 450 years later, one of the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he accepted sannyas from Srila Sridhar Swami, another disciple, and he was given the name Srila Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Goswami Maharaj. He was one of Srila Prabhupada's senior godbrothers. His brahmachari name was Vinod Bihari Das Brahmachari. And another great sannyasi who accepted sannyas on this day, on the inspiration of his godbrother, Keshav Maharaj, is our Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. On this day also, Prabhupada accepted sannyas. So if anyone's planning to take sannyas, this would be a very good day to accept the sannyas order. So what happened was, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he accepted sannyas in 1511, he immediately went to Puri, and he explained to his devotees in Puri that now I am a sannyasi, it's my duty to travel and preach. I want to go to South India, and I also want to find my brother, Vishwaroop, because he left home and we've never heard anything from him since then. In 1491, that's nearly 20 years ago. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to travel, and he came to Pandharpur. There in Pandharpur at the Vitalanath temple, he was dancing in ecstasy, and one Brahmin saw him, and he invited him to come to his home for prasad. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the invitation. He went to the Brahmin's home, and the Brahmin explained to him that there's another sannyasi who's staying in my home. I would like you to meet him. And his name was Srila Rangapuri. Because the Brahmin could understand that with all of the devotion and ecstatic sentence that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exhibiting, he must be a follower of Srila Madhavendra Puri. And Sri Rangapuri was a direct disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to take darshan of Sri Rangapuri, and he offered his obeisances, and then they embraced. And Sri Rangapuri was the godbrother of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru, Ishwarapuri. So with great love and affection, they began to discuss. So by chance, Rangapuri asked Mahaprabhu, where was your home previously? And he said, oh, I lived in Navadvip. And then Rangapuri, he began to remember that, oh, I visited there with Madhavendra Puri once. And we went to the home of one great Brahmin, his name was Jagannath Mishra. And his wife cooked so nicely for me, just affectionately speaking. She cooked so nice, she cooked mochakanda, and I still remember the taste of that mochakanda. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hearing how he had actually visited their home, he said, well, that's my mother and father. He said, that's your mother and father? That means you must be the younger brother of Shankaranya Swami. So in this way, he was able to find out the whereabouts of Shankaranya Swami. So then Rangapuri, he very sadly informed him that Shankaranya Puri had just recently given up this world, entered samadhi, and attained spiritual perfection. Now Srila Prabhupada, at this juncture, he quotes the Gaura Chandradaya, saying that when Shankaranya Swami, Srila Visvarup, gave up his presence in this world, he then became mixed into the personality of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Because if you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, in both shastras it's explained that Nityananda Prabhu is also Baladev, Nityananda Prabhu is also Shankarshan. So when Visvarup gave up his body, he mixed in with Nityananda Prabhu, who was the same personalities in Mahavaikuntha, in the spiritual world. So in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's also said the fourth reason that we worship this day, it's also explained there, and some authorities say, that it was on this day that Shankaranya Swami entered into samadhi, and it was also on this day that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was informed by Rangapuri that his elder brother had left this world. So although it was Chaturmas time, and during Chaturmas, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a strict sannyasi, he strictly observed all of the rules and regulations of Chaturmas. And for sannyasi, they don't shave for 4 months, they don't cut their nails for 4 months, they have very strict dietary rules. But on that day, upon hearing that his brother had left the world on that day, he shaved his head, because that's also one of the rituals. When your family member leaves the world, you shave your head. So though it was Chaturmas, he still shaved his head on this Purnima. So then Prabhupada recommends also that the devotees should shave their head on this day, although it's Chaturmas, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shaved his head on this day. So this is Visvarup Mahotsava for those reasons. And now we'll go on to Srila Prabhupada and his acceptance of sannyas on this holy day. Now Srila Prabhupada, he met his spiritual master when he was in the Grihastha Ashram in 1922. And immediately in their first meeting, his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Goswami, he requested him to preach in the English language. That will be very good for him and very good for all who meet him. So that was 1922. Finally, 11 years later, Srila Prabhupada accepted initiation in 1933, and he was given the name Abhay Charan Aravinda Das. This was in Prayag. Because when Srila Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he went the next day to Dr. Bose and said, I want to give up my job. I've been called by this great saintly person to preach. So Dr. Bose, he tried to speak reason to him that you're a grihastha, you just had your first son. If you become a saint, who's going to maintain your family? And Abhay at that time, he said, but this I have to make my life mission. So Dr. Bose tried to, he tried to explain to him that, yes, you can give up this post in Calcutta, and if you want to travel and preach, why not go to UP and be my representative there? And then both things you can do at the same time. You can run your own companies in freedom, and you can also increase your preaching work. So Prabhupada accepted that proposal because he had a family, he had to maintain them. And he went to Prayag, and he opened up the Prayag pharmacy. And he also began to travel all over India to sell the chemical products. And at the same time, to meet with all of the members of the Gaudiya Mutts in all the big cities. Specifically in Prayag, he played a big role. So that was 1933. And just 4 years later, after Prabhupada accepted initiation, 1937, January 1st, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati left this world. And as soon as he left this world, turmoil began in the Gaudiya Mutt. One group wanted to arrest another group. They went to court, and all the fighting began. So at that time, a young brahmachari, Vinod Bihari Das Brahmachari, he was a kinchana, he had nothing. He saw all the fighting going on amongst the leaders. So he decided to leave Calcutta, leave Bengal, and he went to Prayag, where the Rupa Gaudiya Mutt is, and he went to live there. And there he met Abhay Charanaravinda Das, his godbrother. And Abhay invited him, you come live in my house, I'll make so many programs for you. So the two of them from that time, 1937, became very close friends. And Abhay would set up so many preaching programs for Vinod Bihari Das. And together they would preach, and their preaching was from Vedanta. They would take Vedanta and prove through the Srimad Bhagavatam that Vedanta actually was teaching Krishna Bhakti, as in its natural purport, Srimad Bhagavatam. And they were very fierce preachers. And they were out to destroy Mayavad, because wherever there was any sniff of Mayavad, there couldn't be Krishna Bhakti. So the two of them from that time became very close in their preaching. And then finally in 1940, they both came back to Calcutta, and they began, because by that time all of the main leaders in Gaudiya Mutt had split up, and they were just concerned with their own little zones, their temples, their mutts, their disciples, and they had different groups. So Gaudiya Mutt had disintegrated by that time. So what Prabhupada, our Prabhupada, and by that time he had taken sannyas, along with one other brahmachari, his name was Narottamananda Das Brahmachari, they began the Gaudiya Vedanta Samiti in Calcutta, in a place called Bosapad Avenue, in a rented home. And from there they began preaching the pure teachings as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had set up Gaudiya Mutt. And they began to establish different mutts all over India. And they followed as their Guru Maharaj had done. They named their mutts Devananda Gaudiya Mutt, Udarayan Gaudiya Mutt, Udharan Gaudiya Mutt, Keshavji Gaudiya Mutt that we have here in Mathura. So they were trying to simply continue the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati through this Gaudiya Vedanta Samiti. And Prabhupada became very much involved. Previously, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was present, he would write many articles on the harmonist, in the harmonist, at the request of his Guru Maharaj. Now, it was 1940 that this was done. In 1953, the Gaudiya Vedanta Samiti began two patrikas, the Gaudiya Patrika and the Bhagavad Patrika. You can see in Srila Prabhupada's house we have many of the editions. One of our godbrothers, he went to Mathura, and he went through all of the old Gaudiya Patrikas and Bhagavad Patrikas, and he found where all of Prabhupada's articles are. Prabhupada wrote very interesting articles. He wrote in Hindi, English, and Bengali. And in these articles, some of his most famous articles, of course, we see them also in his original Back to Godhead magazines, they were Patrikas. He would write purports to the Bhagavad Gita, purports to Chaitanya Charitamrita, different translations of different slokas. But then he began an out-and-out attack against bogus societies. So Prabhupada was most famous for his articles on the Murgi Mission. Anyone know what the Murgi Mission is? That's what Prabhupada called the Ramakrishna Mission. Because in those days, Ramakrishna Mission was very popular. And the people were mistakenly thinking that these are the only followers of Vedanta. So what Prabhupada did was, through a dramatic article, it was like a drama, this article, he exposed actually what's going on in the Murgi Mission, how they eat chicken, they eat eggs, they eat flesh, they engage in illicit activities. So this expose made a very big exhibition of what was really going on in the Ramakrishna Mission. Prabhupada became very famous for that. But Prabhupada didn't stop there. Then, his next dramatical article was about the Gaudiya Math. And he wrote about what was going on behind the scenes in the Gaudiya Math. How men with wives were taking lovers of other men's wives. How sannyasis were collecting money but pocketing that money. How they were building big buildings, and with the profits they got, they were using that for their previous sons to send them to America and Europe to become lawyers. So with this expose, the entire Gaudiya Math became in an uproar. And all of the big leaders, they came to Mathura, that what are you doing? You're ruining our Gaudiya Math. And Prabhupada and Bhakti Pragya Keshav Maharaj, they were laughing together. That, oh, you see, we've done something. We've stirred up the pot here. But because the biggest leaders, Sridhar Swami, Tirtha Maharaj, they said, these are internal family matters. They're not to be exposed. Otherwise, how will our preaching go on? So at their special request, Prabhupada stopped writing these exposés on the Gaudiya Math. Internally, he tried to correct his godbrothers in the mischief they were doing. So Prabhupada, at that time, it was 1953. Now this verse. When Prabhupada was still in the Grihastha Ashram, he would have dreams of his Guru Maharaj requesting him to take sannyas. And in his dream, he would be following his Guru Maharaj. And then he would wake up in the morning, he would think, oh, horrible. I can't. How can I take sannyas? I have my wife, I have my children, I have my home. I can't take sannyas. Let me first become rich, and with the money I have, I'll use that for preaching. So Prabhupada, he was not at all inclined to accept the sannyas order. He had five children. He had a wife, he had his father, he had his brother, he had so many dependents. And he felt that he had to remain within business to maintain his family. But he kept having this recurring dream. And he was frightened by it. He would say, this is horrible if I take sannyas. So this sloka would come to his mind. Because in all of Prabhupada's endeavors to become wealthy, to become a very big businessman and successful in material life, he was never able to attain success. He was too compassionate, too soft-hearted. He would let people take loans, they would never pay him back, and in that way, his business could never increase. Because to be a good businessman, Prabhupada explained, you have to be like a crocodile. And next lifetime, you also become a crocodile. So Prabhupada didn't have that mentality as a real businessman to make money. So therefore, as Krishna says here, this is explained to Yudhisthira Maharaj by Sri Krishna, that I especially favor someone How? By gradually depriving him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. So with this sloka, Prabhupada was seeing this happening in his own life. His business was failing. His wife left him, went back to her father's home. His children all went with him. Even when he would come to Calcutta, she would stay separately from him and just send some store-bought dry food for him to eat. She wouldn't even cook for him anymore because he had lost his wealth. So Prabhupada, seeing this, he realized, yes, this is the special anugraha, the special mercy that Krishna is bestowing upon me. My family has rejected me because I'm penniless now. The only thing I can do is take shelter of Krishna Bhakti and my spiritual master. So at that time, Prabhupada decided he would travel and preach. He came to Mathura, and then he came also to Jhansi, because while he was selling his pharmaceutical products, he made good relations in Jhansi. So Jhansi is a small city, not even as big as Mathura. But he was offered a beautiful temple, a facility that could be made into a temple. And he invited his old friend, Keshav Maharaj, that you please come see this place and see if you want to make this into a temple within your Gaudiya Vedanta Samhita. So twice Keshav Maharaj went there to Jhansi. But he wasn't happy. He said, it's not a big enough city, and I don't have the brahmacharis to send to you to help you. So on the second visit, there's a town in Bengal called Bankura, and that's where the beautiful Nim Murtis are made of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Gornitai. So Prabhupada had made a beautiful murti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to install in his temple in Jhansi. And he had brought that murti from Bengal, and he invited Keshav Maharaj and his brahmacharis to come for the installation. So when Keshav Maharaj arrived in Jhansi for the installation never happened. Because Keshav Maharaj, he had already opened several temples. He knew what it took to open a temple. He said, first we have to speak to your sponsor. Is this temple in your name? Prabhupada said, no, at any time they can remove me. So Keshav Maharaj and Prabhupada made it very clear to the owner of the building that if we install this murti, then this temple will be ours and we will do all the seva puja according to our sampradaya. And the sponsors didn't accept that. They said, no, this temple is ours, and Abhay Charanaravinda, he'll just act as a priest, as we want him to act. So Keshav Maharaj and Prabhupada didn't accept that. So therefore, the murti of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not installed in Jhansi. Very soon after, 1955, Prabhupada brought the murti here to Mathura, and he installed that murti right there on the main road in Mathura at the Keshav Gaudiya Math. You can go there and take darshan of that murti with the Radha Krishna deities and Vrindadevi deity there. So then Prabhupada came to live in Mathura, and he was very busy with his writing. It was there that he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets, and he was all day and night writing, preaching, singing bhajan. And the other members of the math, there was one young brahmachari who had accepted sannyas. His sannyas name was Bhaktivedanta Narayan Maharaj. He was very close to Prabhupada at that time. Although he was younger to him, he had accepted sannyas before Srila Prabhupada. So he was always encouraging Prabhupada. They would call him Prabhu at that time, Bhaktivedanta Prabhu. This will help you in your mission, to carry out your mission for Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So the day before Vishwarup Mahotsava, in 1959, Prabhupada stayed there for about 5 years in the Gaudiya Math in Mathura. Prabhupada and Keshav Maharaj, they were together in their room talking and joking. And Keshav Maharaj, he said to him, tomorrow's the day for you to accept sannyas. Very auspicious day, and this will help you to carry out the order of our Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada agreed. And also there was another godbrother there. He was 95 years old. His name was Sanatan Das. So Sanatan, he told Prabhupada that if you take sannyas, I'll also take sannyas. So the two of them, they decided the next day on Vishwarup Mahotsava, they would take sannyas together from their senior godbrother, Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Goswami Maharaj. So it was a beautiful ceremony. And Prabhupada had a very beloved godbrother who was the only Babaji within the Gaudiya Math. His name was Krishnadas Babaji. He used to come here now and then, just show up like magic to see Srila Prabhupada. He was always chanting Hare Krishna. He would never have any conversations with anyone, always just chanting Hare Krishna. So he also came to that, he showed up that day, and he came to that sannyas ceremony. And what Prabhupada wanted was that Krishnadas Babaji simply chant kirtan throughout the whole ceremony. So from 8 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Krishnadas Babaji was chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra very sweetly. Now Prabhupada, being now in the Vanaprast, he didn't know how to prepare. It was so short notice, less than 24 hours, how to prepare to take sannyas. So Narayan Maharaj, he said, don't worry, I'll do everything. He got his bahirvesh, he got his uttariya, he made his danda himself. That danda has three thin rods, that's for the mind, the body, and the words that we dedicate to the Supreme Lord. And then the small rod, the fourth rod, that's the Atma, the soul, given to the Supreme Lord's service. So he made that sannyas danda. And that sannyas danda, he also prepared the Agnihotra for the ceremony. He also chanted all of the yajna mantras for the ceremony. And while all of this was going on, Krishnadas Babaji was chanting kirtan. So during, we know like in our, when we have our fire sacrifices, sometimes the Brahmins, they have to chant some special mantras. So at that time, they would tell Krishnadas Babaji, quiet, quiet, we're chanting it. And from the side, Prabhupada would go, no, no, you chant more, chant more. So later, when Prabhupada was preparing to enter Samadhi, Krishnadas Babaji told the devotees that he is my dear godbrother. He is fully dedicated to Harinam. And he told this story, how when they were asking him to stop chanting, Prabhupada on the side was saying, no, no, you keep chanting. So they had a very loving relationship. And at the time after the yajna, when Keshav Maharaj gave Prabhupada his danda, and then gave him the sannyas mantra, he then asked Prabhupada to speak. Now, we know in Mathura, who speaks English? No, nobody speaks English in Mathura. Hindi or at best Bengali. But Prabhupada stood and he remembered the instructions of his spiritual master, and he spoke in fluent English. So both Bhakti Pragya Keshav Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada, they were from very high-class influential families in Bengal. So they both knew English very well. But Prabhupada, he gave this lecture in English, quoting this verse, how he knew that Krishna had given him special mercy because everything was taken away from him. He had no other recourse but to take complete shelter of his spiritual master's instructions and Sri Krishna's lotus feet. So it was from that day that Srila Prabhupada began his preaching, and by his mercy, we're all sitting here today in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Hare Krishna.